Hindus are celebrating the Ganesh Chaturthi festival, so I thought it would be appropriate to speak a few minutes on Lord Ganesha. He is considered the most powerful deity. Any other god may or may not be saluted, but first we have to salute Ganesha. He is called Vighna Raja. If you salute him, the obstacles will be removed. If you don't, they will be created. Very few of us know that our eternal gratitude, gratefulness, has to go to Ganesha. Do you know why? It is owing to him that all our Hindu culture is flourishing today. How? He is called Ekadanta. Agajanana Padmarkam Gajananam Aharnisham. Anekadantam Bhaktanam Ekadantam Upasmahe. It's a beautiful, meaningful, very well rhyming salutation to Ganesha. Agaja Anana Padmarkam. Agaja means Parvati. Aga means that which doesn't move. Aga means mountain. And she who is born of the mountain is called Agaja. Who is that? Parvati. Parvata Kumari is called Parvati. And Ganesha is her son. When a mother looks at the face of her son, her face just blooms. So the lotus face of Parvati just blooms, just as a lotus blooms when the sun comes out. So when the sun, Ganesha, is seen, then the lotus of Mother Parvati's face blooms. Agaja Anana Padmarkam. Gajananam. But Agaja, Gaja. Here Gaja means elephant. He is elephant-faced. Anekadantam Bhaktanam. For the devotees, Anekadantam. One who bestows plenty. No end. Ekadantam. Anekadantam. Ekadantam. Ekadantam means only one tusk. So why one tusk? An elephant will have usually two tusks. So it is said, he was the scribe to our great creative writer Vedavyasa, because nobody else could take down the dictation of Vedavyasa. He used to be such a fast writer. And the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna also have two Ganeshas. He who had taken down the notes, the talks of Sri Ramakrishna. We can never pay enough tribute, we can never be grateful enough to him. But there is another one whom we rarely remember. Today, the teachings of Swami Vivekananda come down to us only because of one Ganesha. J.J. Goodwin. These are our two Ganeshas. So there was a legend, Vedavyasa wanted to find out some scribe to take down what he was dictating. And the only person he found who was intelligent enough, having memory enough, you know, memories, our devotees' memories, it won't do. It must be very great memory. That's an elephant is considered that it never forgets anything. Its memory is huge. And really it is true. It remembers its enemies even with its last breath. Though that's not the ideal for us. So this Ganesha agreed. to the request of Vedavyasa, I will take down. But then he said, look, once I start writing, I would never stop. So Vedavyasa, if once you make me stop writing, I will never again take up the pen. Vedavyasa was very intelligent. He agreed to the condition. So, how to do it? Because constantly dictating, you know, a man needs time to think. So, it is said, you know, maybe in fun, but 19 shlokas, he will dictate very fast, easy shlokas. One shloka is such a tough shloka, even for Ganesha, he takes a long time. By that time, Vedavyasa is ready with the next 20 shlokas. While writing, probably the pen got broken, so there was nothing nearby, replacement. So he broke his own tusk in order to continue the writing. This is one of the legends that is famous. This is only for fun I am telling. Interesting news, but the real greatness of Ganesha, Sri Ramakrishna highlights in two legends. You know, Ganesha, when he was a small child, one day he was playing with a cat. Being a child, he chased it and scratched it all over. After that, he ran to his mother and extremely pained to see that his whole mother's body was scratched, bleeding. So he was pained and he asked, Mom, who did this to you? And the mom took him up in her lap and said, my son, it is you who have done that. And Ganesha could never think how he could injure his loving mother. Then she explained, my son, any creature that you see is myself only. Because every creature is nothing but the Divine Mother. Ya Devi Sarva Bhutesh Matra Rupena Samsthita Shakti Rupena Samsthita Kanti Rupena Samsthita Shanti Rupena Samsthita. Have you heard the hymn? So, Ganesha understood, being very intelligent, immediately understood. So it is said, when he grew up, he never married. Because how could he marry? If he marries, he has to marry his own mother. This is to say that he who sees God or Divine Mother in everything, he is the knower of Brahman. So Ganesha is a representative, a foremost representative of the knowers of Brahman. So this was one legend. And similar to that, there was another legend that one day Shiva, Parvati, Ganesha and his elder brother Kartikeya, they were all sitting. There was a very precious necklace around the neck of the mother Parvati. Suddenly she announced that he who can go around the universe and come first to her among both the children, he will get the necklace, hara. So immediately Kartikeya, you know, he looked at Ganesha and smirking, you know, huge pot belly and his vahana, mushaka vahana, and whereas Kartikeya was, you know, lean and thin and what is called very fit person, you know, what is called a fit knit, they call them in the America. So immediately he jumped onto his vahana and started. But Ganesha, for a long time, serenely sat down, leisurely got up, and with the bhavana, my mother and my father contain within them the whole universe, went round them, prostrated. Immediately Mother Parvati awarded the Olympic gold medal. There was no silver or bronze medal, only Olympic medal. Many people do not have high regard. They only have fear of Ganesha. They think Vishnu was great, Shiva was great, Shakti was great, but not a minor deity, which is not true. the speciality of Hinduism is that every deity is the supreme reality, Parabrahma, to his or her votaries. Shiva, Krishna, Kali, Mariamma, Ganesha, Kartikeya, no question of minor or major. Every god or god, Hindu god or goddess, is only a form which that particular votary or devotee would like to adore. That is all. So, Ganesha is not a minor deity, he is not merely there to remove the obstacles or to fulfill some of our desires. He is the supreme reality. Parabrahmarupam Ganesham Bhajamaha. So, we are very happy that we have come in the right time to make our pranams to Lord Ganesha. So, this year, I will be discussing the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is titled as Karma Sannyasa Yoga. I give an introduction so that we can continue this particular chapter. Our Vedas are supposed to be the foundational scriptures, canonical scriptures of Hinduism. Every religion has its own foundational scriptures, and our scriptures, Hindu scriptures, are called Vedas. Veda means knowledge. Period. Do not think it is only spiritual knowledge. Any type of knowledge is divine. God is of the nature of knowledge. Knowledge is God. These Vedas have to cater to every type of human being. They have these scriptures, they have only one aim in life. Scriptures are like loving mother. Just as a loving mother tends, nurses her sick child, helps her weak child, and loves and looks after her healthy child, small child, grown-up child, mustached babies. Every one of them, just as mother bestowing her love, does cater to what that particular child needs. Scriptures also have to cater to every one of them, each one of them, whether we are children, whether we are grown-up, whether we are monks, whether householders, whatever be the situation, it is guide us. So, according to our Vedic teaching, the human progress or spiritual progress takes place in 4 stages: karma, dharma, nishkama karma, and finally moksha. What is karma? All creatures in this world are doing karma, every creature. That means anything that has life, anything that has a body and mind, by the very nature, have to do some kind of action. Without action, body will not survive. Only a dead body has no action. Or a person who has attained samadhi has no action. In between, all creatures, human, non-human, they have to act. But we have misconceptions about activity, you know. A fellow was going in the street. He found 2 people sitting in a porch whom this fellow knew. So he asked, "John, what are you doing?" He said, "I am not doing anything." So he addressed the other fellow, "Jack, what are you doing?" He said, "I am assisting John." We think if we are sitting, we are not doing anything. If we are lying down, we are not doing anything. Or there are people maybe fighting in a war, they are doing hectic activity they are doing. But if a great saint is seen to be doing a lot of action, he doesn't really do anything, because for two reasons. One reason is, action is needed only, karma is needed only if there is a desire. Even the mere desire to survive also needs action. We have to eat, we have to drink, we have to sleep, we have to breathe. But a man of self-realization, he has nothing to gain, and therefore he knows he doesn't do. Second reason is, a man of realization knows, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am the spirit. So what is it that does the karma? It is only the body and mind that does the karma. When a person is not identified with body and mind, he doesn't do any karma. So every creature does karma. But every creature, including many human creatures, do not have any discrimination. They are all going on doing karma, good karma, bad karma, mixed karma. And the results would be, if it is good karma, good result, bad karma, grief, suffering, pain. So, for a long time, most of the human beings have what is called lottery ticket mentality. What is lottery ticket mentality? Buy $1 worth of ticket, hopes to win $1,000,000. Not knowing that he will get $1,000,000 when he buys $1,000,000 tickets. When he completes that, then he will get $1,000,000. According to karma, the result. Yesterday we discussed dharma kshetra. Life is a dharma kshetra. If you sow one seed, there will be how many plants? One plant. So whatever we do, that has its exact equivalent result. If we do good karma, good result. Bad karma, bad result. If we don't do anything, there won't be any, practically any result. But what does a creature want? Every creature wants to have happiness and to avoid suffering. It takes a long time for us to realize, if we do not want pain, but if we only want happiness, then there is a law. You know what is the law? Law of cause and effect. So if we want happiness, which is an effect, then we must produce the right cause. So he comes to realize, karma is all right, but it must be good karma, because only good karma can produce good result. That is when he steps into the second stage. But do not think, there are many people in this world who do not tell lies, who do not cheat others. It's not because they are dharmic. It's because of pressure. What is called in English language, Victorian morality. Everybody is supposed to be very moral in Victorian period. They are not really moral. But you know, society disapproves of things, and it frowns upon people who misbehave, at least openly. Secretly they may do, unbeknown to anybody, but openly they don't dare to do. You see what I mean? Tradition. My grandfather never did such and such a thing. My father didn't do, so how can I do? He is not saying, if his grandfather did, he would have done more. But because his grandfather didn't do, he also says, you know, what would people say about it? Public opinion, others' opinion of ourselves, is one of the, what is called, guiding lights of our life. Our friend and philosopher and guide, you know what is it? You know, in the modern world, the most powerful industry, Do you know what it is? Most profitable, most flourishing. No economic depression would ever stop this particular industry. You know what is that? Cosmetic industry. This cosmetic industry depends upon only one instrument. There is one thing upon which the whole cosmetic industry depends. Do you know what is it? Mirror. How do I look? You know, you go to a cosmetic. How does the fellow know how he is looking? He has to look into a mirror. Mirror. This, if you don't have any jobs, produce mirrors. There will be enough number of people to buy the mirrors. But I am not merely referring to the physical mirror, a piece of glass. Every other person with whom we live is a mirror, because we depend upon that person's opinions. Husband depends upon the wife, and wife depends upon the husband. How do I look? And if the husband is looking at somebody else, you know, there was this man, he went with his wife to a supermarket and she was lost. And he wanted her. So half an hour he searched, he couldn't find her. Then a young beautiful woman was passing by. He said, "Madam, can I talk with you for a minute?" She asked, "Why?" He said, "You know, I lost my wife. I have been searching for the last half an hour. But why do you wish to talk with me?" He said, "You know, there is something I can't understand. Whenever I start talking with a beautiful woman, within a minute she appears." So, we depend upon other people's opinion very much. This is one of the greatest bondages. At the same time, it is also, in a good society, it is also a good protection for us, protective armor. Just as a horse needs some blinkers, we need a good society's opinion to keep us disciplined and keep us in the right track. But that's not what I am referring as a dharmic behavior. When a man from within understands, if I want to be happy, I must produce the causes of happiness. I have to be dharmic in Sanskrit terminology. Then he enters into this second higher stage of evolution, which is called dharma, dharmic life. That's what Bhagavan Krishna was also advising through Arjuna to the humanity. First he says you have to do karma. Second, he says, not merely karma, but it should be dharma karma. After enjoying in this world, in the other world, for a long time, man comes to his senses, how long can I go on working? I produce a cause, every cause has a limited effect. As soon as the effect is over, again I have to produce the cause. This is called samsara chakra. It goes on and on. But I am tired. I want unending happiness, eternal, infinite happiness. But that should be, that cannot have any cause, because anything that is a result of cause has a limitation. So this must be something which goes beyond the cause. One cause, but eternal happiness. Then he enters into the third stage, which is called spiritual life, sadhana, or what we call nishkama karma. Beautiful word, nishkama. Kama means desire. Any action done with a desire, that desire, if properly fulfilled, produces, fulfills, satisfies, but again and again we have to produce the same thing. But nishkama means not without desire, but it means only one desire. You are cooking, same result. You are sleeping, same result. You are talking with someone, same result. Whatever we may be doing, it has only one result. What is that result? It will take us to God. Only one result. So that is called nishkama karma. Doesn't mean desireless action, but it means an action which has only one goal: how to take us to God. And through spiritual path, if we go on doing this, pursuing nishkama karma yoga, then that karma brings us to God and unites us with God forever. That's the meaning of yoga. Yoga means that which takes us to God. If karma takes us to God, that is called karma yoga. If jnana or discrimination takes us to God, that is called jnana yoga. If dhyana takes us to God, unites us with God, that is called dhyana yoga or raja yoga. If emotion takes us to God, that is called bhakti yoga. Whatever it is, yoga means that which unites us with God. Our Vedas, as I have been telling, it caters to these three types of evolutionary stages: dharma, nishkama karma, and finally to moksha. Usually, the Vedas are divided into two parts. The first part, Purva Kanda, is called Karma Kanda. The second part is called Jnana Kanda. So these are the famous, popular, well-defined two paths to take us to the highest reality, self-realization. So the Lord has been teaching both the glory of Karma Yoga and the glory of Jnana Yoga. Sometimes he is praising karma, sometimes he is praising jnana. So Arjuna means not Arjuna. Every sincere spiritual seeker is an Arjuna. As we discussed yesterday, life is a battlefield. You cannot take rest. You have to fight whether you like it or not. So these paths are there. How to fight in a better way? There is an intelligent fighting and an unintelligent fighting. The Lord was here to teach us through Arjuna to each one of us according to our stage of growth. So sometimes he is praising karma, sometimes he is praising jnana. But one point which we should keep in mind is, yesterday I elaborated, every karma must end in that particular state of mind which is called jnana. I am happy. It's a state of mind. Knowledge. I am happy. I am unhappy. Another state of mind. Jnana. That which rules our life from birth to death is called jnana. You see somebody. Suddenly you have the knowledge. Right or wrong doesn't matter. You have the knowledge. This person is a good person. He may not be good, he may be a cheat. But since your knowledge says he is good, your whole behavior, attitude, approach would be good. But suppose you meet somebody, say Ramakrishna, with a haggard beard and all that. You may have wrong opinion, that he is a madcap, he is a dangerous person. Then what would you do? You would run away from him. Or if he is a saint, you will get bored. Yeah, if the subject is very nice, lot of jokes, then you will hear with interest. If it is a monotonous voice, high philosophy, every 2 seconds saying you are Brahman, then after hearing few times you are Brahman, what I call, you know, talk samadhi. You will be taking talk samadhi. So everything depends upon our knowledge. To illustrate this point, so that we understand it clearly, I quote from an incident, a teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi used to say, everything depends upon your knowledge. So there was a prince, had a beautiful wife, he had nice dinner, and he was sitting, Hamsa Tulika Talpa. He slept, hugging his wife. and was dreaming that some wicked fellows came, dragged him from his bed, took to the jail and threw him in a dungeon full of filth, mosquitoes, flies, evil smelling place, and he was suffering. There was a fellow actually under such circumstances in a jail. He had ordinary food, then he went to sleep. He had a dream, he was a prince, a beautiful wife was hugging him, and he was supremely happy. Now, who is the happy person and who is the unhappy person? You see, according to the state of our mind, we are either happy or unhappy. It's the most marvelous thing, irrespective of what the outside circumstances are. If we can train our mind to be good, to feel positive, hopeful thoughts, enthusiastic thoughts, happy generating thoughts, we are happy people. Even if we have the largest house or wealth or whatever, but if our mind is not all right, we are the most miserable people in the world. So this is a point to illustrate that knowledge what makes us what we are. There is a simple way of saying that a man is what his thoughts are. Or you tell me your thoughts, then I will tell you who you are. Or even you tell me who your friends are, I will tell you who you are. Or tell me what books you read, what films you watch, I will tell you what you are. So this is what we have to understand. Every action has its result, a physical result, but every action also results in a state of mind which is called knowledge. It could be right knowledge, it could be wrong knowledge. So every action leads to knowledge. But if it is good knowledge, there is now no substitute for it. If this be true, then why should we pursue any activities? Why not sit and start to think right thoughts, good thoughts? No. Unless we have reached a particular state, to sit and then use our mind and make our mind active with positive, good, helpful, hopeful thoughts, it takes a long time of training. And how this happens, there was a beautiful parable of Sri Ramakrishna. A parable is there to illustrate the inner meaning of a scriptural teaching. So it is said that there are certain celestial trees called Kalpavriksha Kalpataru. And if anyone happens to sit underneath it, whatever thought comes into his mind, immediately that would be fulfilled. So the point I would like to illustrate is that unless the person has good thoughts only, it may be extremely dangerous to sit under Kalpavriksha. The same event could make a person unhappy, or could make another person unhappy, or could make both persons unhappy. You know, there was this man who wanted to visit a lunatic asylum. So he went there, and an inmate came, and the officer of the asylum came, received him well, and was taking him round to explain various situation of the patients. So he went to one room, and he saw a man sitting in a corner, in a fetal position, and moaning, lulu, lulu, lulu. So the visitor asked him, what is the matter? Who is Lulu? So the officer explained, Lulu was the girl he wanted to marry, but she jilted him. Ever since he is in this condition. Then they went to the next room. It was a padded cell. The man was running round, beating the walls with his fist, shouting, Lulu, Lulu, Lulu. Visitor was surprised. Is Lulu the cause of this man's state also? Said, yes. This was the man he married. Ever since he is in this condition. So it is said, so there are two reasons why man feels misery. One is not to get what one desires, the other is to get what he desires. So, Sri Ramakrishna's parable is, a man was walking in hot sun, he was tired, thirsty, and he found a small tree, and he thought, let me take a bit of rest. He laid himself down, and then idle thoughts filled his brain. Oh, if I can get a nice plate of, you know, food and cold drinks, how happy I would be. He didn't know that he was sitting under a kalpavriksha. Kalpavriksha means wish-fulfilling tree. As soon as the thought came, immediately a golden plate, silver cups, and beautiful cold drink, Fanta or 7-Up or whatever. And the man was very happy, unthinking man. He enjoyed it. Then he said, now if I can get a beautiful bed, how wonderful it would be. Instantaneously he found himself on a very soft bed, Hamsatulika Talpa. He said, this is marvelous. The only thing lacking is, if a beautiful woman comes and starts massaging my feet, how marvelous it would be. And instantaneously, he found a beautiful woman came and was pressing his legs. He was in the high heaven. Then suddenly he thought, supposing a hungry tiger comes and kills me. Immediately, Brahma Arpanam, Brahmavi, Brahmagnav, Brahmanavutam. The point is, our mind is that kalpavriksha. If we do not know how to use this mind, it can cause our ruin. It can also fulfill our desires. It can also cause ruin. So we have to train our mind. Otherwise, it is not possible to use it in a proper way. From ancient times, this conflict always existed in our Vedas. And until today, the conflict still runs. Which path to God realization should we take? Should we take the path of karma, or should we take the path of sannyasa? This is not a competition. There is no question which is superior, which is inferior. According to our state of mind, we have to use that particular path which would take. See, this competition can only be between two similar things. Who is superior? Is a child superior, young man superior, or an old man superior? That kind of comparison will not work. Between two children, who is superior? Between two young people, who is superior? Between two old people, who is superior? Who is superior, a writer or a scientist? That is a useless comparison. If both are musicians, then who is the better musician? If one is a cook and another is a driver, who is superior? This kind of comparisons are irrational comparisons. So, which is superior? Karma yoga or bhakti yoga or jnana yoga? No, nothing is superior, nothing is inferior. Whichever suits us, whichever takes us to the path, that is the superior path only for that particular person. So, but you know, we are ordinary people. So sometimes we compare ourselves with others. And then we say, probably that path is better. No, that path is not better. If you are suited for that path, that would be better. If you are not suited, it not only not better, it will even hamper your progress. You know, many students, they are forced by the parents, say, to take up medical science or something, which probably they don't have the aptitude. They have the intelligence, but they don't have the aptitude. Then they will be ruined. So through Arjuna, Arjuna was questioning, and through him, the Lord is telling this simple truth. The Arjuna's question was, Now, I am confused by your teachings. So, sometimes you are praising karma, sometimes you are praising very highly jnana. Which path shall I take? So, the Lord is telling that neither path is either superior or inferior. One reaches the goal through any one of these paths, provided that path is followed sincerely. So this conflict also should not come into our minds, who is superior, householder or a monk. Swami Vivekananda had delivered beautiful talk on Karma Yoga. And there he illustrates a story. I am sure some of you remember the story. It is worth recalling, because even today, in the Indian mind, Hindu mind, there is always this conflict. A monk is superior, a householder is very, very inferior, is a worm. Every monk also somehow thinks that a householder, all householders are worms, excepting breakfast time, lunch time and supper time. The Lord says it is completely wrong. Sri Ramakrishna says it is completely wrong. To illustrate this point, Swami Vivekananda specifically, who taught Vedanta in the West, especially in America, he had narrated this story. There was a prince, and one day he put a question to a monk, who is superior, a householder or a sannyasi? And the sannyasi said, "Oh prince, you better come along with me, because I cannot give you right away the answer." So they were walking together, and suddenly, you know what happened? They entered into a big city that belonged to a king, and as they were passing, there was a marvelous procession. They came to know the princess, the daughter of that king, was having swayamvara. In those days, you know, girls can choose the boys, swayamvara. So she was standing with a garland, and everybody who wanted to marry her was passing, you know, showcase. She would choose, shop these girls, bridegroom shopping, bridegroom shopping. So many people passed, very well-known people, rich people, beautiful people, heroes, but she didn't like anybody. A young monk, shaven-headed monk, young man, he just was passing by, he was watching this procession. This princess happened to see this young monk. Immediately she ran to him and put her garland on his neck. Immediately the young monk took out the garland, threw it out and said, "What is this nonsense? I am a monk. Who the hell are you to put this garland on me?" He walked off. The princess was mad with love with him. So she started weeping and running after him. Her father was also running. Now this monk who was leading this prince to answer his question said, "Let us follow this and see what happens." Very soon that young sannyasi, he simply disappeared into the forest. The princess was heartbroken. She was weeping. This monk who was leading the prince to answer his question said, "Now let us go into the forest." So they walked and walked towards the sunset. They reached the middle of the forest and they sat down under a tree. And they were tired, they were thirsty, they were hungry. But where do you get? There were no, you know, drive-in restaurants there. As they were sitting, there was a family of birds on the tree, the father, the mother, the children. So the father bird was telling to his wife, "My dear, guests have come. We are householders. It is our duty to entertain the guests. Atidhi Devo Bhava." So the father said, "I will bring a piece of firewood. It is cold, so they can warm themselves." And he brought with his beak some small fire. And very soon the prince and the monk gathered some firewood and started a fire. Then the father bird said, "We have no food. They must be very hungry." He said, "The only thing I can offer to him is myself. So he jumped into the fire. And the wife also jumped. And the children, small birds, were telling, our parents sacrificed themselves, but we are small people and two guests are there. We won't be sufficient to, you know, fill their stomachs, quench their hunger. So let us also follow the footsteps of our parents. They also jumped. The monk who was sitting there, then he opened his mouth and said, "O prince, do you understand now that the monk who renounced the world, even though the princess herself had chosen him, just like straw he renounced, he was great in his own place. But these householders who sacrificed themselves, they were also great in their own station of life." The moral of this story is that wherever we are, let us be students, let us be good students. Let us be householders, let us be good householders. Let us be vanaprasthas or retired people, let us be good retired people. Let us be monks, be good monks. There is no question of superiority or inferiority. From a purely human point of view, human beings are accustomed to categorize, to hierarchize everything. This is rich man, this is poor man, this is a pundit, this is an illiterate man, this is a king, this is a servant. That's completely wrong. Everyone is great in his own place, provided they fulfill their duties properly. So please try to understand that in the eyes of God, there is no householder, there is no monk. The whole creation is nothing but his children only. He doesn't see where a man is, what a man is, how much he has. He only sees the heart of the person. So this is what our true Veda is teaching us. So Arjuna's question was, which path is superior? So the Lord says, there are dvividha, nishta, pura, prokta, mayanaka. There are two. Nishta means beautiful paths. The path called karma, but he is not talking about ordinary karma, the path called karma yoga and the path called jnana yoga, sannyasa yoga. This is how the fifth chapter is an explanation of this beautiful principle that each one is great in his own place. That is the first point we have to understand. Each one of us is great in our own place for two reasons, that we cannot jump out of ourselves, take something else which is not suitable for us. And this truth is applicable not only in the path of spiritual life, it applies in every field of life. You are a student, which subject should you pursue? Which is superior, which is inferior? No, every subject is great, provided that's what gives you happiness and you are fit for it. Which dress is better for me? I'm only mentioning, you know, in fun. Each dress is good. You know, these people who sell the dress shops, they put an image and they put, you know, nice dress. It looks very beautiful. But any person who is passing by, I will also look equally beautiful, which is not true. You know, sometimes you may look like a scarecrow if you put on those things. Yeah, you know, I sometimes think that women are far superior to men. You know, in deep winter, I am shivering even after putting so many clothes. These ladies have nothing up to here. They are walking like that. What an endurance. You know, they are putting up all those difficulties just to show themselves off. So, do not imitate. You try to find out. Then take the karma. How much should I work? Should I work 6 hours? Should I work 8 hours? Should I work 12 hours? No. There is a capacity. If your capacity is 5 hours, if you work more than 5 hours, you will suffer. Somebody can work 16 hours and yet not feel tired. That is for that person. So in every field of life, how much time should I meditate? One person may meditate, capable of meditating only for 10 minutes. Another person may sit for 2 hours. It is not the sitting that is the important thing. What is your capacity? Food. That person is eating that type of food, maybe superior food. I am eating this type. No, whatever is suitable for your stomach. So it is, whether it is ahara, whether it is vihara, whether it is sleep, all these fields we must have a balance. What is the balance? That which is suitable for our body and mind, and that which is conducive for our physical and mental health, and of that which we are capable of doing it, that's the best path for us. A kind of balance. Samatvam yoga vuchyate. So what is the point? The point is, let us not do trying to imitate others, trying to compare ourselves with others. That is bad. It creates profound unhappiness. You know what is fashion? Do you know what is fashion? The most horrible thing in this world. Fashion is nothing but comparing ourselves with others. That person is having the latest, you know, dress. So I must also have the latest dress. Now, are you happy? No, I don't know I am happy. But if others say that I am happy, then I will be happy. What is the nature of happiness? This is one question which nobody can answer. Would you go to anybody and say, no, can you tell me, am I sleeping or am I awake? Of course, I can tell you whether you are sleeping or awake. Would you go to anybody, any psychiatrist or Swami and Swami, I have a profound question for you. Am I a happy person? You know, one fellow was walking in the street. So some other fellow was coming towards him. Both are total strangers. So this fellow confronted that fellow, said, Enri Hanumantappa, Chanagidira, Hanumantaya, are you all right? The other fellow was surprised, sir, how did you know my name is Hanumantappa? He said, I did not know. After seeing your face, I thought that must be your name. This is not a question, am I happy? If you don't know whether you are happy, who else can tell you whether you are happy or not? Happiness is a thing which you will know all by yourself. No, you don't need other people's certificate. Whether you are sleeping or not, you don't need to know other people's opinion. So the point is, we should never imitate, never be slaves to other people's opinion. Fashion is nothing but catering, slavish, you know, behavior, and trying to follow other people. That's why financially we lose, and health-wise we lose, in so many ways we lose. I'm not saying that you should be a rebel. What I'm saying is, you have discrimination. See what is decent, nice, helps you. Be selfish. Have you ever heard any Swami giving you this advice? Be selfish means be centered in your self. Not lower self, but the higher self. But even from a lower self point of view, whatever improves your happiness, your health, your potentialities, your brings out your inner talents, try to don't listen to other people. See. Question yourself, find out. So the point is that we have to develop, follow the path that which is best suited for ourselves. The second point, as I already mentioned, is the good Lord doesn't see any differences. A child, a grown-up person, a learned man, everybody is his child only. So it is described in the Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne, Brahmane Gavihastini, Shunichaiva Shvapakecha, Panditaha Samadarshinaha. Panditas, a real pandit. Panda means jnana, true knowledge. He doesn't see any difference between a dog, a dog eater, a cow, an elephant, a learned Brahmin. What does he see? He sees only the divine Lord vibrating within each one of us. That is the first one point. The second point is, a child, as I said, should not be compared to a grown-up man. Why? Because the child is not a total loss. He is a child. He is in a potentially growing state. One day, he will also grow. Today, a sinner. Tomorrow, a saint. Every sinner will become a saint. Every saint was a sinner in the past. It is the nature of evolution. So, with this, there are also other points. What is the Lord telling? Are you a Christian? Follow Christ, your religion. Are you a Muslim? Follow your religion. Are you a Buddhist? Follow your religion. Are you an atheist? Be a sincere atheist. You know, and we have wrong notions about some of these words. Who is an atheist? A person who is generally says, I do not believe in God, he is an atheist. But an atheist need not be a bad person. Maybe the atheist is very truthful, very principled person. He doesn't go to any temple, read any scripture, worship any God, but he may be very strict principled person. Whereas so many of our, you know, devotees, bhakats we call them, you know, this when they come to the temple, their emotions come out, devotional emotions. But when they go to the business, all the money laundering, black money business, this goes on underneath the table. So there was a businessman. He was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. In front of his shop, there was a big picture of Sri Krishna. Being a rich man, he made it in, it can be revolved. So whenever everything is nicely going on, the Krishna is smiling, incense stick is burning. Whenever he had to do some black business, he will revolve Krishna towards the wall, finish his black business and turn back the Krishna again. The poor Krishna did not know what he has done. So, this beautiful idea that each one of us have our own path according to our fitness, aptitude, and every path is leading to the same Lord. This was the central point the Lord wants to bring up in this. Then Krishna's specific question was, which is superior? Pursuance of one's own duties or giving them up? Karma anusthana or karma sannyasa? Now again, do not misunderstand. Sannyasa means what? Giving up. Karma sannyasa means what? Giving up. Karma. Who can give up karmas? Is any one of us capable of giving up karmas? So many, most of the time, you know, even if you have to breathe, that is a karma. Even our sleep is a karma. Sitting and thinking idle thoughts is terrible karma. Everything is a karma only. So, nobody can give up karma. But then, what can be given up? The ahankara, that I am the doer, that can be given up. So there are three things which should be given up. What are those three things? For the person who is the least capable, give up karma phala. For the person who is a little more advanced, this give up the attachment to karma. For the person who is highly advanced, give up the egoism, that I am the doer. Who is the doer? The Divine Lord is the doer. How do you know? It's specifically mentioned by Lord Krishna. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. So karma sannyasa is not giving up karma, but giving up the abhimana, the ahankara. And it proceeds in three stages. First, give up the results of the karma. Now, what does it mean, giving up the results? That I do the karma, but I don't get the results? No, if you do karma, the results will come. Then what is to be given up? The expectation that the result should be in accordance with my expectation. That should be given up. You will get the results of your karma, now or later. But you may not get immediately. They will come. But the thing is, if you expect what happens, and if they do not come, then you will be frustrated. Now this is a beautiful subject, which I will not pursue, but I will do it in the evening class in a more elaborate way. But it is, the Lord is not advising us to give up the results, or He is not saying you won't get the results. What He is telling is, you do what you should do, and you leave it to God when, how, and where the results will come. And whatever results come, you be content with them. That's what is called the least advanced person giving up karma, phala, tyaga. But even more stronger bond is that we may be prepared to give up the results of our actions, but the attachment to work, that is harder to give up. I will illustrate it in a minute what it is. Even harder to give up is the kartritva bhava. I am the karta, you are not the karta. Your body and mind is doing it. Your body and mind do not belong to you. They belong to Prakriti or the Divine Lord, the Divine Mother. Is no way it belongs to you. To illustrate this point, supposing one of our monks is asked to look after a garden. That is his work. So he grows beautiful flowers, beautiful vegetables, wonderful fruits. But all the time in his mind, he knows, I am a brahmachari, I am a monk, and this land belongs to Sri Ramakrishna, and I am only working there as a inmate of this ashrama. So everybody has right to all the fruits, means fruit, flowers, vegetables, fruits, whatever. So he has no attachment to the fruits. But he may suppose suddenly the head of the center says, look, we have nobody to take care of the kitchen or take care of the accounts or do puja or even worse, give a talk to the public. He says, I was so happy, I was with nature and I like my work, nobody disturbs. No, don't be attached. At a moment's notice, you will have to give up your attachment because you are a slave of Sri Ramakrishna. Wherever he is, like a military command. So today they will post you here, tomorrow they will post you there. You have no choice. You will have to follow whatever. Otherwise they will court-martial you. This is spiritual militarism. So do not have any attachment to work. Otherwise you are not a karma yogi at all. So even that is difficult but possible. But the last one, you know, if somebody says that, what a wonderful garden, Swami, you created. Swami, how beautifully you talk. Or if we say that, you know, how wonderfully you sing or give a talk. Or if I say to devotees, your curry is so beautiful. Who did it? I did it. That's very hard to overcome. Very hard to overcome. That ahankara bhava. So, karma falatyaga, karma saktatyaga, and ahankara tyaga. These three are involved in the performance of karma yoga. So, this is what the Lord is telling. When you are capable of giving up these three, then your mind had reached such a state. Even if somebody says, we don't want you to work, we want you to sit and pray, do japa, do meditation, that person, happily he would be able to do. So, as I mentioned, this eternal conflict between what is called the contemplative life and the active life in the Christian circles, eternal conflict, no need to have any conflict. So, each one is fit for that kind of path. So pursue your path. You are a devotee, bhakti marga. You are a karmi, do karma. You are a meditator, do meditate. You can sit and discriminate, jnana marga, you do that. So there is no inherent conflict at all. All paths are equally superior, suitable, and every path ultimately takes to only one goal, which is God. But Arjuna asks, which is good, to give up the actions and be contemplative, or to sit there and then discharge one's own duties in the right way? So this would be the subject matter for my talk in the evening class. So we had nice time. I'm so glad to see so many of you. It's a beautiful chapter. We will continue this in the evening class, and tomorrow also I think we have one session. I will try to complete it. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.